Item D. Start us off again, everybody.
Yeah, I've got some too. This is some correspondence that was received and has been forwarded to the board. We've also got a hard copy here.
So today we are bringing forth 10 different contracts with 15 different properties that we're proposing, or we're recommending that the board issue a notice of non-renewal for. I'd like to go through each property just to point out the reasons why these are being brought forward to you. If you have any questions, please feel free to ask me. We'll go ahead and start with the Costello contract. This property was brought before the board as Mr. Costello purchased only a portion of property under Williamson Act contract. The board approved his contract and noted that the staff was to bring back the substandard parcel to you should he not apply for a boundary line adjustment to increase that to over 40 acres in size, which he has not done. So that's being recommended for non-renewal. The Crawford property is the same situation. Board had approved his contract as he had bought only a portion of an existing contract. He has a 27-acre substandard parcel. He's not applied for a boundary line adjustment to increase that acreage. So that is also being recommended for non-renewal. The Reynolds property, they recently purchased this property. We sent them a courtesy letter knowing it was only a portion of an existing contract. They responded to that letter stating that they did not intend to continue with commercial ag uses. There is a copy of that email correspondence as an exhibit to the Ag Preserve Administrator staff report. So they are being recommended for non-renewal, and they are not opposed. The Erickson parcel is a 10-acre parcel that has no ag uses occurring on it. We've corresponded with the property owner, and they are not opposed to non-renewal on that property. The Snyder parcel is a 40-acre parcel that has no ag uses occurring on it, and that was brought to our attention by the survey that they filled out and certified as accurate. The Johnson property is a 10-acre parcel, substandard in size, no agricultural uses occurring. Again, that was brought to our attention when they filled out their survey, and we've actually called them, talked to them about that.
What was their response?
They did not intend to have a commercial ag use. The King parcel, again, substandard in size, no commercial ag use is occurring. We did attempt to contact them via email or phone, but we did not have that information available. We did an internet search trying to contact them, and we're not able to, so this is based off of their survey. The Dornhofer property, again, 10-acre parcel. There's no ag use occurring on the property. That, again, was brought to our attention by the survey and confirmed by correspondence with the property owner. The Kavalik is just there. It's a portion of a existing contract that she purchased, was notified by a courtesy letter that she needed to apply for her own contract, and the property owner has not done that. Ulix is being recommended because they bought a portion of an existing contract. They noted on their survey that their primary use is for timber and harvest, which is not the primary use allowed by the contract. So they needed to apply for their own contract, as theirs was only a portion, and they had changed their primary use. Chandler, they had noted on their survey that they had no ag uses occurring on the property. It was only being used for open space, and also they had purchased only a portion of property under contract. Young's is the two parcels, and they had changed their use to timber harvest from ranching, which is considered a significant change in use, and they have not applied to for a contract amendment to address this issue or the fact that they own only a portion of an existing contract. Moody did not respond to the survey, so we do not have a anything from him stating what the ag uses are occurring on the property, but he did only purchase a portion of the property, and so we need him to apply for a new contract, which he has not done. Hawkinson is being recommended as they purchased only a portion of an existing contract and has not applied for their own contract. Scarspace Investments is also being recommended for the same reason. They purchased a portion of the existing contract and have not applied for their own contract. That's all of them.
Well, so that's a lot.
It's a lot.
Where are we on that, Mindy? Let's see.
Correspondence, which I passed out to the board, was from the planning department, from Haley as well as Bernadette, and it's a letter that went out to a Mr. Hawkinson, and it had to do with contract number, isn't it the 72025, and his response. So that's the correspondence the clerk's level has received.
Let's see, of course. Any opponent? Any proponents' arguments?
None on mine.
Any opponents?
None on mine.
I think Mr. Hawkins must be there.
Okay, we'll get you just set here. So we got the okay, Mr. Hawkins, come on.
Consider this opponent.
Hi. I think that
you have to state your name for the record.
James Hawkinson.
Thank you.
The correspondence that I sent, I think, pretty well sums up what my points are. But I would like to add that part of the problem with trying to get a new contract is that last time I checked, the only usages allowed are very specific primary usages. Our old contract was ranching. Ranching includes many different usages. And usages can change from seasons and years. In our case, we did a timber harvest last year, which is an important element, but it's not always the same every year. So that would technically put us in violation of the contract. So such is the case for many other people. If ranching were an acceptable usage, and maybe it is again, I don't know. In my correspondence, I don't get clear answers. That would make things, I think, a lot more palatable for folks that need to get into these new contracts. I think that most people are probably understanding that from an administrative standpoint, having these fragmented ownerships in one contract is hard for the county to handle. We probably don't understand why it would cost $1,400 to simply input some more information, create a new contract, but that's the way it is. So in my case, we would like to see that whole issue resolved of usage, and if ranching will be reintroduced as a descriptive verb, that'd be great. And also, we're in the middle of this procurement process of an adjacent piece of property that we want to merge into the project. So to have to get a new contract at this point before that happens would mean later on we're going to have to go through a bunch more headache and expense to merge it into the new contract. So we're asking for another year to make sure that these things can be accomplished, and then we're willing to go along with the process. And like I said, that's pretty much what I stated in the letter that I sent. So I think that's all I can contribute at this point.
Okay, thank you. Board discussion.
I'm curious if you have a reply or, you know, kind of a answer to what Mr. Hopkinson brought forward.
Absolutely. So under the current guidelines, it is specified for uses, which ranching, no, is not specifically within the guidelines as a use. However, livestock grazing is a use that we do contracts for, and the production of livestock for food and fiber. So I believe that if you're doing a ranching activity, we have covered that in our guidelines. You would just specify what that ranching activity is. So if the primary use of the entire property or a large portion of the property is livestock grazing, you would specify that use. If the entire property or a large portion of the property was utilized for timber production, you would specify that use. The reason for that is if there is a significant change in use, it needs to be brought back before the board, because should someone change that use, let's say from livestock grazing to intensive farming, the property itself may not qualify because only a small portion of it might only be able to be utilized for intensive farming. So it should be up to the discretion of the board to be able to review that and approve that use. As far as Mr. Hopkinson, the fees that he brought up, the planning division fees are $1,175. There are a notarization fee, which I'm not sure exactly what they charge for that, which you do for his contract, and then a recurring fee.
Supervisor?
Go ahead. I'm follow up on this. I'm always confused with this, honestly. We have timber production in Williamson Act, and I guess I need to know, as a forester, if I'm managing for timber, I would use the timber reserve thing. But how do we treat something that might be in a qualify as a timber preserve under the state law and the tax exemptions there, but it's also used for grazing?
So one would be a compatible use with the other. So livestock grazing is considered a compatible use if your primary use is timber production and vice versa. So you would do, it's...
So the Williamson Act then would respect the other compatible use?
Absolutely.
Okay.
But what about the designation that you just described?
So for instance, if someone were to designate that the primary use of the property was livestock grazing.
Okay.
And there was a year that they decided that they wanted to harvest timber and they didn't want any cattle on the property, that's not a problem. The guidelines allow for there needs to be livestock, or there needs to be commercial ag income for 3 of every 5 years. So if they took a year off, it would not be an issue. They would just note that on their survey.
How would we respect livestock exclusion from those acres if they're doing reforestation? Because that would be longer than 3 years.
Absolutely. It's within the guidelines. On the parcel as large as what we're looking at, it's like 60%.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe it's a 640-acre parcel. So if they were to portion off a piece of that to keep the livestock off, it would not be a problem.
So is there any questions?
I have more, but go ahead. I'm going to shift to something else. Go ahead.
I'm curious if he non-renewed versus we extended, is there a monetary value to that for him?
Yes, so the non-renewal process, if we were to issue that now, then it would start in 2024, and so the taxes will incrementally increase starting in 2024, but that incremental increase it spans over 9 years. So the first increase you would see is in.
So, depending on what he...
10%, roughly, right?
I'm not sure about how that works with the assessor's office.
So, okay. So, depending on how long it took for him to purchase the property that he's trying to do, if that works for him, then he would go into contract again, say, in a year, or 6 months, or whatever he's trying to do.
Yeah, so if you purchased that property and applied, And I apologize because I'm not familiar with what piece of property, so if it would qualify or anything like that, but let's say it does and he wants to add that to his existing contract, and he did that next year, that would become effective January 1st, 2025. So we would have, you know, it's the annual renewal date is what we're gonna hit. So it's, you know, even if he applied for it January 1st of 2024, it still wouldn't become effective until 2025.
So is that a huge, I'm just trying to wrap my head around the financial burden to him if we extend versus he does a non-renewal. What are the, can we weigh that out a little bit? What does that look like?
Haley Lang, planning director. Well, generally speaking, if we, you know, if the board wishes to extend, you know, a year for Mr. Hawkinson to figure out his contract, then, you know, he wouldn't have to deal with the incremental property tax increase, right? So if the board decided to non-renew, then he would ultimately have to, you know, handle the incremental property tax increase. So that would be, you know, the issue related to the property owner.
For a year.
Yeah, or within
long
it
takes him to
right year one, year eight, right? So it would be up to the property owner when they, you know, want to get that back into compliance.
But then it's on him what it, and it's up to us to figure out or make that determination. We don't know if he's actually going to purchase that property or not. So
yeah.
Well, can I add something?
Sure.
So not knowing what property is potentially going to be purchased, it may not require to be added to his existing contract. So if it's a standalone contract, it could remain under the existing contract if he continues to use the approved use, you know, has the primary use of the property. Let's say it's livestock grazing. He buys another section of property, livestock grazing, and that's what he's going to use it for. He wouldn't be required to amend his contract. But we don't know what piece he's purchasing, so.
So he's asking for a 1 year extension. How many extensions have we have? How long has this process been dragged out?
Since June of 2022 was the courtesy letter, first courtesy letter that was sent.
So was it help?
Yeah, I'm trying to get my head around all these properties a little bit here. I'm going to ask some specifics. So the Crawford piece, the 27 acres, is that the Crawford piece over on the Shasta River? Where is that?
Crawford. So this is north of Grenada, just outside of Grenada.
Okay, south of Grenada. Thank you. Moving down to Moody's property. So those the mining claim timber properties on the Klamath River?
The Moody property?
Yeah.
No, Highway 3.
Where?
That's part of the old Burton Ranch.
Okay. Okay. And then Scarface. I'm thinking of something maybe different than this, the location of that. Which side of the hill is it on?
It's north of Scarface Road.
On the Shasta side or the Scott side?
There's a map kind of.
Is it in the staff report?
It's in the
academic preservatory. Oh, thank you. It's in the report.
I'm only asking a question because I think there was some kind of a use development pending with some new purchase here up there, and I don't know if it's this one. That's a more of a recreation based.
The Scarface property is outlined in purple.
I don't know if it has bearing on that piece, but isn't that the mountain bike investment, recreational ranch, or whatever that Purchased a couple of years ago for an off-road bicycle recreational opportunity.
That was not indicated on their survey. Their survey stated it was used for uses. So we do have an area on our survey where we do ask for compatible uses or other uses occurring, and they did not indicate that.
I know there was a kerfuffle over when it was purchased because it was in a timber preserve, and then it was going to a different use. And maybe it's irrelevant to this discussion, but that's what jogs my mind on that parcel. And then my final question, since, and I know it's probably from an expediency standpoint, since there's different circumstances for every parcel, why are they all lumped together in one decision?
You mean all of these today?
Yeah.
Because there may be
a no on one and a yes on the other, but they're all lumped into one decision.
Well,
I mean,
Bill, you want
to? Yeah, briefly. Yeah. Bill Carroll, Sioux County Council. Well, partly it's a matter of format and expediency to have all 10 rather than to have bring 10 separate resolutions for 10 separate public hearings for each property. You're certainly free to state as part of the motion that a property would be deleted out of the resolution, but otherwise you'd have 10 public hearings on each one.
What does a public hearing person's rights have under the law? Can they be lumped like that?
I guess
a due process question.
I know what you're saying. I mean, the right is to speak and be heard, to have notice of the action being taken, and to have a chance to address the issues. I don't see any particular reason why that can't be done or that they must be separated. The basic is due process is provided. They have notice and a chance to be heard before you.
And then, follow-up question to that then, so should we cancel all these today or not, non-renewal on all these? Do they individually have appeal rights, or do they have to come together because it's one decision?
They can individually appeal.
Okay. So, would you just, for some members of the public and maybe the press, would you kind of just give a backdrop as to why we're going down this path with separate contracts? Because it may confuse quite a few people out there of what's going on, one. And then secondly, with regard to Mr. Hawkinson, the property that he may be interested in purchasing would have to be in the Williamson Act already in order to amend into the Williamson Act that he currently has, if it isn't. And has he been made aware of that?
There, he has not given us a parcel for us to look at
okay.
to see if it would do.
But that would be key, one, because I would want to make sure he knew that, because Williamson can come into Williamson, but a non-Williamson property can't come into the Williamson, because I think the board has decided we are not adding new contract or expanding the footprint.
Yes, and it's very clear in the guidelines.
Okay.
It's in several places.
Okay, and so if on Mr. Hawkinson, if he went down the non-renewal, but brought whatever this other piece of property is, or brought his designation in a year from now under the non-renewal, is there a cost to come back into the contract, a new fee for taking it out of non-renewal and bringing it back in?
It's the standard Act Preserve Amendment cost, because his property is still a portion of that contract. So we have to amend that existing contract to bring his property out and create his own contract. So we have that.
You're doing that currently, though, right?
He has not applied for that. The non-renewal is,
so
it still remains encumbered by that existing contract. It's just an issuance of a notice that over the next 9 years, it's going to go out.
Incrementally, the property tax goes up.
It will go up, but the contract is ending in 9 years.
Right.
So it's still under that existing contract and encumbered by that existing contract.
So maybe I'm phrasing it wrong. If he goes into non-renewal and he's paid the $1,200 or $1,300 that I heard you talk about to make his own contract, is there an additional fee if he goes into non-renewal to come back in?
Nope, it's just the active amendment.
I want to make that sure that's clear. And then if this board decides to extend another year, it doesn't... Basically, the only savings would be the incremental jump in the first year of property tax.
Correct.
Which I'm assuming is somewhere around 10% because you're trying to get back up to 100% at the end of 9 years, somewhere in there.
I
don't know how it works, but
yeah.
it's not like you're doubling it overnight or in 1 year.
I wouldn't imagine, but...
Okay, all right.
Well, if he's only paying 10% now and we added 10%, I guess it would
if
be
if he's paying 200 now and you're not going to, it's not going to go to 400 in the first year. I can't imagine that.
Well, yes. Because
really?
If we do 10%, right, and we break it up for that he's paying 10% now and then 10% each year for 9 years, that would be doubling it the first year. And then the year
Well, on $200, it'd be 20 bucks.
10% of 200.
Yeah.
It goes up incrementally. So maybe that's a, maybe we need to delve into that. Aside from this, get the tax budget.
Yeah.
Get some more specifics.
He was going to give us a presentation on this,
We had asked for that, actually. So put him on notice next meeting.
But back to the first question.
Yeah.
Just kind of give a summary of why we're going down this path. Because there's several, I mean, even in Mr. Hawkinson, he's in, there's like, what, four or five owners on that one contract. And
right.
it's been problematic in the
mm-hmm.
past, I think.
Yes.
So go ahead. Sorry.
Thank you. So several years back, the planning department brought in a proposed change update to the Limestone Act guidelines for the county. And within those guidelines, it stated that should the board want to issue a notice of non-renewal for a contract, the entire contract would be non-renewed at once. As the board directed staff to look into existing contracts, we found that there were many, that it wasn't just one owner that was affected by this. There were multiple property owners that over the years had purchased pieces of existing ranches or farms. And so they might still be in compliance, but should a neighbor no longer have a commercial ag use on their property and they're under the same contract, we would have to non-renew the entire contract. So we've been working with property owners to help them, encourage them, and guide them through the application process so they can apply for their own contract so they wouldn't be affected by what neighbors were doing or not doing on their property.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, any other board questions?
Just maybe just a quick, I mean, for the public that wonders why we're so deep in the weeds here, is that, for me anyway, I take it very seriously. You know, I'm going to defend as best I can the Williamson Act contracts and the ones we have in this county because it protects both our way of life and our industry. With that said, though, there's a reciprocal response that's required by the holder of the contract because of the significant tax break that's given to the owner of that land. If you're out of compliance, you've broken a contract. And that's contract law, which is what we're in the weeds about right here. So that's critically important. That's why we're in the weeds. And sorry for the detailed deliberation here.
Let me add on to that. And so when the state of California threw the Williamson Act funding out, because the counties that had Williamson Act were, do I want to call it subsidized, or they were basically paid the difference of property owners keeping open space, and in that deduction of that property tax was backfilled by the state of California. Well, the state of California under Schwarzenegger blue-lined it, and it's been blue-lined ever since. So the county now, out of the general fund, makes up that difference. So we're backfilling those that property tax. And so why we're going down this path is those that are not in compliance shouldn't be receiving that benefit because it's on the county now.
Sure. So for me, a little clarification, mm-hmm. we don't backfill. We just lose out on that income. That
well,
you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yes. It's a difference. We're not, you know, because that, otherwise that money's come from somewhere.
Yeah.
So I think we're on the right path here. I agree with Supervisor Howe. I've never been all that happy with the Widows Act because the state pulled out. I thought we should have pulled out at that point. The other counties have done that. I've gone along with it. We have a contract. I'm willing to adhere to that. But I also, like you said, Supervisor Howe, it's incumbent on the other people to adhere to the thing. So I appreciate the people that were honest on that survey and said they weren't using it, they weren't doing it, because then they're stepping up. At this point, I think we get to make a decision. Most of these, I think, are straightforward. They all had a chance to speak. They're not here, those that are, you know, type thing. So I think I'm okay with collectively moving the majority. But I think the only one that we may want to pull and have a discussion is Hawkins.
Yeah, I would ask
because
that.
They're here. So so let's can we make a decision on the 9 that to move forward with the rescission?
I'd like to recommend a motion on the 9, the other 9,
okay.
The exclusion of
Hawkins.
Yes.
Second.
All of Hawkins. Wendy, do you want to take a vote on that?
All righty. Supervisor Haupt?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsa?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes, okay, let's discuss the Hawkins request for an extension.
For 1 year.
For 1 year. It's up to you.
I'm okay with that. I know that you've granted extensions on this before, but I think the dots have come together today, and I'm hoping that Mr. Hawkinson has new information that he can move forward on, especially on the definitions. I hope that helped, and I'll leave it at that. But I would move to extend it by 1 year.
Second discussion.
Second discussion.
As part of that extension, and I'm not going to make part of the motion, but I would encourage you, if you do have a parcel that you're looking at, that you clearly communicate that with the county so that moving forward, when we look at this again, we'll know what we're doing.
I agree with that.
I hope that you can work really well with the county so that you can work through the process.
I'll go along. Again, this is where I've softened on my stance on the Widows Aid Act because, at the end of the day, I'm sorry, you've already had a year. We're going to give you another year, which is just a tax break that we're given that most people don't get in this county. But I would say that's 1 year is about as far as I would go with this. And it's either happens or it doesn't happen, and we need to keep this process moving forward.
And as Natalie Reed, County Council, as part of this motion, you would be seeking to remove associated APN and contract number from the resolution and other materials that were prepared before.
Okay.
Second agrees.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Second agrees.
Okay, so Supervisor Howe?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsa?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Valenzuela?
Okay.
So I'm going to need new resolutions.
Yes.
Is it possible to get those revised before they're out of closed session so we can get all signed today? Or do you want to wait till the 7th?
No, I got
that. It'd be great.
That's awful demanding, you know, Wendy.
I know.
You're giving her 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm going to get rid of the steering wheel.
Okay, so can I ask real quick the vacation rentals? Are we going to extend it? If not, then we're going to take a break.
Haley Lane, Planning Director, I am requesting to continue this item to the November 14th board meeting.
Okay, very good. We'll do that. We are now going to go into closed session.